Hey everyone, welcome to Locked On Lakers for Monday. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky. The Lakers dropped to 0-3 Sunday afternoon against the Trailblazers, and all eyes are on Russell Westbrook. That's next on Locked On Lakers.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily Los Angeles Lakers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Thanks to everybody for making Locked On Lakers first listen of every day, Monday through Friday, no matter how or where you get your podcasts, always free, never behind a paywall. Do want to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 with promo code Locked On. That's prizepicks.com, promo code Locked On. Another reminder as well, Locked On Lakers on YouTube is where you go to get the show a little bit early, particularly on non-game days. We tend to post this a little before the audio, so it's a little bonus. Plus, it's fun to watch the show. It's a little bit of a different experience. So we appreciate everybody who's helping that channel grow as fast as it has been. Troy Brown came back in the lineup. Darvin Ham had some things to say about Russell Westbrook. I mean, Westbrook was the focus of all this. The late game, would you call it a collapse, Andy? But they blew a lead. In the fourth quarter, the Lakers.
Yeah, it was a collapse. They were up by eight with 4:42 left in the fourth.
I don't want to get into an argument over what technically defines a collapse and what doesn't. The bottom line here, Andy, is that the Lakers are 0-3, and they have lost to two of the best teams in the Western Conference. And they've lost to the Trailblazers, who are not bad. But they are not one of the best teams in the Western
Conference. They're currently 3-0.
Right. They are. I've actually been higher on Portland than most people coming into the season, but they're not an elite team in the West. No. They're just good. Westbrook was a focus of a lot of ire. Darvin Ham's decision-making around Westbrook. You want to start there, Andy? Do you want to start on the shooting? Do you want to start on the lack of, again, support from the supporting cast overall?
Why don't we start with Russ? Because I think that's what people are talking about the most and focusing on the most, even if, and we'll get into this over the course of the show, I'm not sure it's actually the biggest story of the season so far for this team, or the single biggest reason for the Lakers now being 0-3. This was another game where Russell Westbrook struggled from the field, 4 of 15 to be exact. He finished with 10 points on 15 shots, 0 of 3 from behind the arc, 6 assists and 6 rebounds against 0 turnovers. And Russ has been increasingly more careful with the ball. And I do think has been, before we get into the stuff that really was bad during this game and continues to make Russ the avatar for everything wrong with the Lakers at large. I do think Russ has generally been trying to do a lot of the sort of non-Russ things that people want from him. He's been certainly more deliberate with the ball, with his passing. I think he has been more engaged and attentive defensively. Like, you know, some of those proverbial non-star things from Russ, I do think to his credit, he has been trying to do. That said, in this game, his decision-making was often flat-out awful. And I thought over the course of this game, it's a very strange thing when I will just talk about how Russell Westbrook as a point guard had no turnovers, but often had terrible decisions. The terrible decisions often came at the expense of those shots and the way he went about looking for them, the type of shots that he took, the looking off of teammates on the court while this stuff was happening, the time on the clock still remaining, the mother of all bad 2-for-1.
Yeah, that's the play specifically that people are going to remember. Because look, I mean, Russ did a lot of stuff. You know, you mentioned only took 3 3-pointers and missed them. But like, you know, that's not a crazy total from anyone. Certainly not your one of your starting guards. But he tried to play. This is where I was watching this with somebody today, this game, and like you see it, like he's just not finishing. And there were three or four plays, you know, where he's, you know, finishing down the left hand and all these things that used to be really automatic for Westbrook. And he didn't finish. And I, you know, Darvin, and for people who missed it, Westbrook with about 28 seconds left, the Lakers up by a point in the fourth quarter, pulls up and takes a quick jump shot with, I think, 17, 18 seconds left on the shot clock. That little bank shot that he like mid-range bank shot that he likes, and he missed it. Blazers go down. They eventually win the game. The 2-for-1 was, I thought, a bad idea. You're up by a point. Get a good shot. You don't need a 2-for-1 there because the second half of it is going to come theoretically with 6, 7, 8 shots, and you're either winning or you're down by one. You want to have a better shot. It's not how I would have done it, Andy. But the bigger problem with it is,
and Darvin Ham said afterwards, by the way, just that if Russ was going to do that, he would have preferred that Russ drove to score or drove to kick it out. Patrick Beverley actually set him.
And I understand, you know, the idea of, okay, if I drive and I kick, now it's not a 2-for-1 anymore. Now, okay, fine. Maybe you lose. Somebody gets a cleaner shot, or you just keep running.
But you don't need the 2-for-1 anyway.
Exactly. But I'll tell you why I don't think he did it. It's because Nurkic, and I know Nurkic had 5 fouls at the time, Yusuf Nurkic on the Blazers, you know, who's played very well for them. So, you know, now that he's healthy again, I don't think Russ thinks he can finish there. And so you watch these plays happening from the beginning of the game where he misses a bunch of layups and he's very aggressive and he's trying to get to the rim and he's not finishing the play. And you get to a point where Russell Westbrook, of all people, won't, maybe because he thought it would take too long, I doubt it, won't attack on Yusuf Nurkic at the end of the game because I think he thinks he can't finish that play. And I don't think he believes he's going to get the call anymore. I just, all of this stuff, like it wasn't that Westbrook in my mind was terrible throughout this game. Although, you know, you mentioned the lack of turnovers. He hasn't played very well. He was terrible against the Clippers.
I thought this was by far the worst game Russ has played of the three games this year. I don't even think it's close. I thought
he was, I mean,
again, his decision making throughout this game, which leads to, I mean, beyond that 2-for-1, you know, when he came there, that he was put back into the game. The Lakers were up by 8 points in this game with 4:42 left in the fourth quarter and really having built a lot of momentum. And it really felt like this game was swinging in their direction. The Lakers had dug themselves out of a few deficits over the course of this game. And Russ got subbed in for Troy Brown, which, you know, beyond the stuff that happened with Russ afterwards, I didn't understand why Darvin Ham did that in the first place, because the way Russ had been playing, I didn't see any need to put him back in this game anyway, because I frankly didn't feel like he had earned either the right or the benefit of the doubt or the necessity, however you want to phrase it. I just didn't see any purpose of putting him back in this game. And beyond what it did with Russ, I actually thought it took a better defensive option on Damian Lillard, who went nuts the later this game went along. You know, Lonnie Walker ended up the primary defender on Dame, often on an island. And I'm not saying this to beat up on Lonnie Walker. I think he was doing his best out there, but he was getting eaten alive. And that's really just an assignment that it's above his pay grade. And it's not really what Lonnie Walker
Lillard
does.
Started 0-for-4 in this game and finished 15 of 25. Right. So he went 15 of 21 after that.
And
nobody, put
Russ back in this game, combined with the decision to keep Lonnie Walker on Dame, it felt like a microcosm of the bad execution down the stretch of the fourth quarter, whether you're talking about the way the players executed themselves or, frankly, a few decisions that Darvin made over the course.
Where I was going was like, I don't think Westbrook played well against the Clippers either, and I don't think he played well against the Blazers. And so even though he's not turning the ball over, he's not contributing. He's not playing well. And the fit remains as awkward as ever. So let's talk about what you're getting at here, which is this question of what do you do with him? Do you entirely bring him off the bench? Do you just sit him all together? The fit isn't there yet, certainly. I don't know exactly what improves. And, you know, you look at the impact that it had on the offense. Lakers stopped scoring in the second half of the fourth quarter. Some of that is related to Russ. Some of it isn't. But nonetheless,
LeBron dribbled out the clock late in the game to just pull up a three. The ball didn't go anywhere else. I mean, that was also a bad shot.
Doesn't work as well when he's in the game. So what do you do? What is Darvin doing? And why did Darvin bring him back in the game? Let's get to that next.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by Prize Picks. Laker fans, if you have not signed up yet for Prize Picks, you are missing out on daily fantasy made easy. Prize Picks has the best NBA DFS prop game on the market. Prize Picks offers more NBA props than any other DFS prop operator. All the superstar players are available, as well as bench players that only get a handful of minutes each game. You can pick 2 to 5 players and pick whether they will score more or less, or accrue more or less of their stats projection from Prize Picks. You can win up to 10 times your money on any entry. Prize Picks also, and this is incredible, this is Brian's favorite part of all this, projection on any sport that you watch, and this includes NBA, NFL, MLB, NHL, PGA, college football, men's college basketball, women's college basketball, soccer, WNBA, esports, NASCAR, tennis, MMA, boxing, Eurobasketball, cricket, and say it, Brian.
Disc golf.
Yes, disc golf. So use the award-winning app on both the App Store or Google Play. Entries can be made in 60 seconds or less. It's really easy, safe, fast withdrawal. So download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com. Sign up, play daily fantasy sports, and first-time users can receive a 100% deposit match up to $100 with the promo code Locked On. So if you deposit $100, Prize Picks gives you 100. So that easy. Don't forget to use the promo code Locked On to sign up for that instant match. If you're not playing Prize Picks, you don't know what you're missing.
So Andy, there's a lot of controversy on Lakers social media over the weekend because they're Russ Westbrook still on the team. And, I mean, that's really what it gets to. And, you know, the Lakers are 0-2. Now they're 0-3. It is clear that they've got all kinds of problems, and of which a big one is Russell Westbrook, and he is the avatar, certainly for everything that is not looking good.
He's managing to somehow overshadow the fact that the Lakers are averaging around 20% from behind the arc in three games this season. They shot 18% against Portland, which, by the way, is actually the reason they're 0-3. If they shot merely run-of-the-mill below average from behind the arc, as opposed to train wreck that was so gory and bloody, comically, everybody died.
Comically bad.
Right. Like, if they would shoot 26% as a team from behind the arc, which is terrible, they'd be 2-1.
This is true. And, you know, some of
this is the biggest reason that they are 0-3. And it's not even
close. And stuff that we should talk about over the course of the show. But the thing is, the dynamic hasn't changed. And I get it. I've seen comments like, you know, Rob Pelinka is afraid of making the move. He's afraid of pulling the trigger. He's afraid of making a bad trade that's going to make it worse. And all these, yes, yes, he is. And you know why? Because he should be. it's not that the Lakers are afraid of undoing the damage of the Westbrook trade. It's pride. No, it's not. It's because, as we've tried to explain to people for nigh on 16 months now, whatever it is, this was a 2-year commitment, and the ability to undo it if it doesn't work, and it doesn't appear to be working, is very low. It is extraordinarily complicated. And this is the reality that they're facing. There are Lakers fans out of frustration. I am not picking on Lakers fans here. I get it. They are angry. They are frustrated. And at what looks three games in, like a season that is not going to go even kind of what the most optimistic fans thought it might be. The landscape doesn't hit. If there was a trade out there that was like, oh, this would definitely do the trick, Lakers would make it. it's not a secret that they're not holding on to Russ because they want 20 games to see if Russ works. They're holding on to Russ because they want 20 games to see if anything better comes along, because what's on the table, we can argue about Buddy Hield and Miles Turner. Miles Turner's hurt anyway. What's on the table, they don't think will do them enough good this year and completely locks them into this sort of low seed play-in slash six seed hell for the next 2 or 3 years. That's their view. And they could do better maybe with improvement after. So if that's the case, and I think you agree with me, but if that's the case, what do you do with Westbrook? Because the only way this team can kind of achieve anything, I think, is if they find a way for him to be productive. And it's really hard to figure out how to find a way for him to be productive given the construction of the roster.
Yeah. And the construction of the roster is in part the byproduct of the Russell Westbrook trade.
It's entirely a product of the Russell Westbrook deal.
And, you know, when Russ put up that 2-for-1, like LeBron had this look on his face, like somewhere between you got to be bleeping me and wait, what just happened? Like, why?
Yeah, and it was different. It was different. There was a play. I texted you about this. There was a play earlier in the game, at the end of the first quarter. LeBron, near the logo, like pulls the defense out and whips a gorgeous pass on a roll to Damian Jones, who just didn't have his hands up and maybe just can't catch. Hands like feet, as our old football coach used to say. And the ball bounced off, and you just see LeBron like, wow, like this is what I've got this year. Like, this wasn't even like an interior, like he just can't catch. But the Westbrook look was different. That was just like, what, huh? But the frustration level, you can tell, is already there.
Yeah, and it was interesting. After the game, LeBron had already been asked about Yusef Nurkic getting switched on to Russ. And, you know, what that both represents in terms of a defensive scheme where basically you've got a center who is essentially able to monitor the paint and monitor Russ because he's not really paying attention to Russ at all.
And
as you pointed out before, they had sensed that Russ was not confident in his driving at that point, that you necessarily had to worry about that. LeBron was asked about his philosophy with 2-for-1s in that situation, which is essentially asking about Russ's decision. And LeBron said, quote, "I feel like this is an interview to try to set me up to say something. I can tell that you guys are already in the whole Russell Westbrook category right now. I don't like to lose. I hate to lose. I don't care what happens over the course of my season, over the course of my career. I hate to lose, especially the way we had this game, but give credit to Portland. You guys can write about Russ and all the things you guys want to try to talk about Russ. I'm not here to do that. I won't do that. I've said that over and over. This is not who I am." And later, you know, after Darvin had clarified what he would have preferred Russ had done in that 2-for-1 situation if he wanted to treat it that way, he said that he brought Westbrook back into the game because he wanted another athletic perimeter defender so they could switch everything along the perimeter. But then also was asked about the possibility of not playing Russ down the stretch and any concerns about, you know, the politics of it all. And Darvin said, this is pretty close to a direct quote, that he doesn't have time to worry about people getting up in their feelings. So Darvin has said multiple times that he is willing to do the things that are necessary for the team to win, even if it ruffles some feathers of a player of a stature of Russell Westbrook. And this is interesting because I know that there are a lot of fans who think that people are, that the staff, the Lakers, whoever, they're afraid to pull the trigger with Russ when it comes to, you know, playing him off the bench, not playing him in the fourth quarter, I suppose sending him home altogether, which I think you would agree, Brian, we're not there yet. Like, sending him home right now would be a pretty pointless approach to all this.
It's just, you're dropping a bomb on sort of the season and the perception of the season that it's not necessary yet. They may get there.
But do you think, though, that we've reached a place where they should just pull the trigger on Russ playing off the bench?
I got some thoughts on this, because the answer is yes, but there are caveats to it. And I will say, It's worth noting too, LeBron also said later in that press conference, I always have time and score and what's going on and how the defense has been playing me throughout the course of a game. It's always in my head. You know, so I don't think he liked that 2-for-1.
No, nor should he have.
I think the answer, I'll tell you next what I think about this.
Locked On Lakers brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline.net, your number one source for all your pro and college football betting needs and sports info this season. Find all the latest football league developments, game matchups, news, and podcasts. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sporting wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores. The fastest way to check in on all of your favorite sports and events, including MLB, MMA, boxing, golf, but of course, the NBA. That's why the overwhelming majority of you all are here with us. Lakers, currently now 28-1 to win the title. They fell from 20-1 before the season opened. They just keep steadily dropping.
I feel like, Andy, if you give it another week and a half, you can really get some sweet
odds. Well, this is what I was going to say. If you still believe, as a Laker fan, you should be monitoring the number and deciding exactly when you think it has hit the bottom, and then maybe consider putting in a wager because you know the odds are only going to start.
The comeback is coming.
Yeah, the odds are only going to start getting tighter. Interesting, though, they are still 12-1, the Lakers, to win the West, which would be a fun season. And remember, you cannot win the title without winning the West first. Head to the website today, use your mobile device, learn more about the trends in action, bet online where the game starts.
Okay, so, you know, you talk about where the Lakers are and what's coming. The next two games, Denver and Minnesota on the road, then they host Denver. They get New Orleans a week from Wednesday, it looks like. That is, you know, Zion and Brandon Ingram both got hurt on Sunday, but who knows, they could be back there. And then, like, you know, even like the Utah games, like Utah's 3-0. They don't realize they're supposed to be bad. Like, what if that's still going on? Like, the two games that were supposed to be the gimmies in this right now are against the top team in the West.
Well, here's the problem with Utah. They have too many solid NBA players who clearly want to get traded somewhere good where they'll play meaningful basketball and are trying, frankly, too much to showcase themselves. They don't give a crap about the women.
I think when people thought like Utah was going to win 14 games, it was like, I think maybe they thought they'd only play the young guys and like Lauri Markkanen was going to play 14 minutes a night or something. Whatever it is, they were wrong.
And yeah, so the Jazz, Jordan Clarkson wants to go somewhere good.
Who can blame him? You know, somewhere where his Insta really can be utilized in all the ways that his Insta should be. So you asked me about Westbrook, and, you know, is it time to, that's why we keep this thing here. Is it time to find, like, put him on the bench? And the short answer to that is yes. He is not part of their best lineup combinations. He made some, you know, good passes tonight, like you said. Yeah. It's not that he's a trash player, but the fit is just still so awkward with LeBron on the floor. And I'm sorry, I'm not reducing LeBron James's minutes so that Russell Westbrook can be better. They are not where I think they are sort of like we had talked like before the season started, like the hope would be that the rest of the roster would make it really hard for Darvin Ham. Like they're not getting enough juice, I think, from the rest of the roster to make that choice easy. I thought this was Patrick Beverley's best game.
Yeah.
If they got more of this from Pat Bev, like you talk about bad decision making from Westbrook, this was great decision making from Beverley in terms of just making, you had 5 assists, simple plays, make the routine play, the textbook pass, do that stuff. 2 dribbles, pass, whatever. There was nothing complicated about what Pat Bev was doing, and he still needs to hit more from the perimeter. He was only 1 of 3 from 3-point range or whatever, but this was the best he played.
He also, I thought Patrick Beverley did certainly better than I think the first couple games of the season. He did a really good job of playing Patrick Beverley style, very physical defense, you know, very up on whoever he's defending, without getting so frenetic that they're obvious fouls. Mm-hmm. Like Patrick Beverley, I thought, made a lot of pretty sensational defensive plays. I mean, like I thought he did just a really good job controlling his MO defensively. I agree with you. This was the best game he had as a Laker.
And so, you know, but like Reeves, I thought was okay tonight. Didn't, you know, he did some, right. Or Sunday afternoon. It was fine. Did some stuff, but like, he's not crushing it. You know, Kendrick Nunn has barely played, which is a whole other deal, which I'm sure we'll get. What is it? Tuesday and a couple days before the next game, we can talk about Kendrick Nunn. We can save it for now and talk about it later.
Yeah, point save being, a little bit about Troy Brown as well, too.
Both, right. Both of us had very high hopes for what Nunn would offer. Opening night, it looked like he might deliver on that. And since then, has been invisible for two games. And so that is a very disturbing development. Damian Jones, you know, Thomas Bryant's hurt, and Damian Jones wasn't very good. And so, like, you start looking around the lineup. Troy Brown just got back in the lineup. Certainly provides defensive flexibility. We'll get into him, you know, more over the course of the week. But you can't rely on him as a scorer. I think they're getting about as much out of Walker. Walker played 32 minutes on Sunday. It's going to be hard to play Lonnie Walker more. You don't want to play Patrick Beverley more than 30 minutes a night. I mean, like, they're already loading up on... on, you know, the guards who are kind of, you know, I mean, Beverly wasn't even very good until Sunday. Can't do much more. Like, so if the other guys aren't going to give you more, you know, JTA was fine, does sort of JTA stuff, but that, you know, plays a different position. You start really changing your, the rest of the roster is not making it easy for Darvin to sit Westbrook. He might probably need to do it anyway, but it's not, they're not helping.
No.
And you know, for all of the Westbrook talk, and he is a massive part of this because they are in this position because of that trade, both because of how Russ has played and because of what it did to the roster and their option tree going forward. But the supporting cast hasn't been very good. They had finally had four players in double figures. You know, Westbrook got 10, Walker had 15.
Yeah. 10 the hard way.
Beverly got 7. You know, Troy Brown's got 4. Toscano Anderson's got 4. Damian Jones had 4. You know, Reeves had 7 in 19 minutes, which is fine. But, like, they're not getting a ton from everyone. And so on a night where Davis has 22, AD was really good, I thought, through most of this game. Didn't get much out of him offensively late, but okay. He still finished with 22, 10, 3, and 6. Like, if we live in a world where 22, 10, 3, and 6 from AD isn't enough to go with LeBron's 31, 8, and 8 plus 2 steals and 2 blocks on 12 of 22 shooting. I know the 3-point shooting wasn't there. They're screwed.
Yeah.
Like, that can't be good enough on a home game to beat Portland, who's a good but not great team. It's not going to work because you can't expect both of those guys every night to score 35 points.
Well, this
as
also.
As good as we need them to be and expect them to be, that's too much.
This also, too, I think. Getting back to the shooting, which,
again, oh God, I forgot that. Sorry, I left it off.
Well, but for all of the focus that is always on Russell Westbrook and, you know, LeBron's response that we talked about earlier to that question, which, as much as he is correct that it was an absolutely leading question that was really about Russ without saying Russ's name, it's become clear that guys on this team are tired of having to talk about Russell Westbrook specifically. And there's a reason that he is, you know, such a lightning rod for attention with all this. I mean, it's not out of thin air, or, you know, it's not totally manufactured. It doesn't change the fact that the single biggest reason this team is 0-3, without debate, there is no close second, is the fact that they cannot make outside shots to save their life. And the reason I bring this up, beyond reiterating this point, because we had spent so much time talking about Westbrook that it bears mentioning, but also that is part of what is making it perhaps more difficult for Darvin Ham to justify taking Russ out of the starting lineup, because one among many reasons you could have is player X does a better job spacing the floor for these guys. Nobody is spacing the floor for anybody.
And the defensive
on
combinations
this team.
Just are really tricky. It's just everything about it.
Well, the defense is fine. I mean, this is the other problem is the defense with or without Russ on the floor has been fine. The defense is often an area where people would look as an excuse to take Russ off the floor, and Russ defensively has not.
Oh, no, I just mean the defense, you know, the availability for defense, you know, with the rotation.
Sure. They have potential combination problems based on who's not shooting well. When you can't keep a guy on the floor offensively, if you put some, I'm just saying that they're limited because the supporting cast isn't right. playing well and nobody's shooting. I was trying to agree.
Sure, sure. But like somebody on this team shooting 35% from three, 34%, like nothing world beating, but competent. That could be if Darvin feels like he needs, you know, an opening. I mean, I'd like to think that Darvin would just decide to do this if it's what he wanted to do, because he's the head coach and he's clearly going to outlast Russell Westbrook with the Lakers. I'd like to think he doesn't need it, but that opening would be there if somebody was actually making outside shots. But the reality is nobody on the team, like we had low expectations for this team as an outside shooting team based on everybody's career averages. They're not even hitting their unimpressive career averages.
This will get better. This will get better. The question is, how much will it matter? And what else? Because here's the deal. The Lakers have been in, they were in Sunday's game, they were in the Clipper game, whatever, because they are hitting their free throws and they are not turning the ball over. Last couple games, at least.
And they're playing good defense.
Opening night, but not last couple games, they haven't. Are those things sustainable? It's been a high turnover team for the last couple, you know, last few seasons. And so I don't even want to, it was more of a rhetorical. Are they going to continue hitting their free throws? Because that's been a problem. So like if the answer to those questions is yes, and they become a normal bad three-point shooting team, they will win some games.
Yeah.
The question though becomes, how big of a hole are they going to be in? Because you play well in Denver on Wednesday, you know, you can still lose that game. Play well in Minnesota, you can still lose that game. Play well again. 0-3, that's why this game was important. And, you know, even if the schedule starts to even out a little bit as it goes along, if you find yourself 5, 6, 7 games under 500 in this Western Conference, you are in a very challenging place. Lots more to cover. We'll get more into Darvin Ham's rotations and Troy Brown's return and what the heck to do with Russell Westbrook as the Lakers head to Denver on Wednesday. Locked On Lakers is where you go to get the show a little bit early on YouTube. Thanks again to everybody for contributing to that channel. We'd love to pull comments from it, so make yourself part of a show that way. Cam Brothers on Twitter is another good way to hit us up if you want to be part of the show. See everybody Tuesday.